It's time for Twig This Week in Google. I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo one last week. We've got Stacey Higginbotham on the line. Also, Matt Cutts is joining us. We're going to talk all about Amazon's big surprise Echo announcements. Also Google's EU antitrust solution, Levi's smart jacket, Twitter's expanded character count, and a whole lot more. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 424, recorded Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. The Echo Chamber. This Week in Google is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and enter promo code TWIG. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. To learn more about fiber optic download speeds on your smartphone, go to snapdragon.com/gigabit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, where we talk about, well, what else? Google. Sometimes there is a what else in there. We talk about the cloud. We talk about social. But we've got a lot of Google, a lot of Amazon, plenty of stuff to keep us on topic today. I'm Jason Howell. I'm filling in for Leo Laporte, who will be back next week. And there's going to be a lot of really cool stuff to talk about on the show next week. I kind of wish it was next week, because then we'd know what Google has in store as far as devices are concerned. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. I'm happy to be here and happy as always to be joined by Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT Podcast, IoTPodcast.com, and the Internet of Things newsletter, Stacey on IoT.com, and of course, co-host of This Week in Google. How's it going, Stacey?
It's going well. I am joining you from my hotel room at an airport hotel in San Francisco.
Oh, I was thinking that maybe you redesigned your home to look like an airport hotel room.
Hotel? Yes, yes. Do you like my generic SF fridge?
That's very nice. Very nice. Where's the Amazon Echo in there? I can't see where it's mounted.
This one doesn't have one. Oh. I'm sure there's a security camera hidden somewhere in here, though.
Yeah. Oh, let's not think about that. I'm hoping not. But also joining us, super awesome guy, Matt Cutts, acting administrator for the U.S. Digital Service. And it's been a while since you've been on This Week in Google. It's great to have you back, Matt.
Really good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you, because like leading up to the show, I was like, man, what is Matt doing right now? Because your kind of duties at the U.S. Digital Service have shifted over the past, I don't know, year. Did you start about a year ago at this point? And I mean, I know at the beginning of the year, things really changed. What are you doing right now?
It's a year and 3 months at this point. So whenever I started out, I joined the team of the U.S. Digital Service that was working at the Pentagon. And they're doing some really cool stuff about military recruiting and trying to, you know, make those systems work better. And then in January, I switched to the headquarters, which is part of the executive office of the president, and have been the administrator. And there's so many great projects happening. Like, if we get the right engineers, product managers, designers on board, we've got some really, really fantastic stuff to help veterans, doctors, and patients. Just a ton of different people with different, you know, making the federal government work better, which is as important a problem as we can do.
Nice. That's really cool stuff. Important work. And I have to imagine, we were talking a little bit about this prior to the show, but, you know, shifting from the Bay Area where you've worked for so long to go to the other coast, essentially, go to Washington, D.C., and live your life there. D.C. is such an awesome city, so I'm sure you're having a lot of fun being in a new place. And basically, you have a new life at this point.
There's a lot to do there. So yeah. It turns out our cats are city cats. Who knew? You know, they adjusted to all the sirens immediately. So,
but they just stay indoors anyways, and occasionally, hopefully, at least I'm hoping, they crawl onto your shoulders during the show. Maybe I'm holding out hope for something that won't happen. But hey, it makes really great TV, so we'll see.
If that's a thing, I'm so in. I want to see this.
Well, I know we've had some intrusions by your pets as well, Stacey. And I got to say, it really makes great TV when that happens.
Yeah, you know, as long as they're cute.
Yeah. That's true.
No naked mole rats. I don't want to see any of those.
Go away, mole rats.
Yeah, okay. We'll just never mind.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what I had planned for a little bit later. All right, so before we kind of get started with, you know, some of the really, really important news, you may remember, go back in time. Just a week ago, we celebrated Google's 20-year anniversary of registering the domain google.com. This week, we celebrate Google's 19th birthday, and who knows what we'll celebrate next week. But Google, yeah, I think that's probably it. New Pixel devices you guys will be celebrating that. I won't be on that show, but I'll be there in spirit. But Google is celebrating. If you go to google.com, their Google Doodle, they change it all the time, has a little play button on it. It activates a spinner. So you can spin for your chance to play one of 19 different, doodle games from Google's history, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of dives back in time. Oh, I got that one too, Carson.
Oh, I remember. So who does, like, who gets the fun job of, like, making these games and doing this? And do they have another job, or is this all they get to do? Because every time I see these, as they become fancier, I'm like, who's doing that? How fun is their job?
Yeah. There is a dedicated doodle team at Google that works on, you know, trying to figure out what would be good doodles. And then sometimes they get assists from other parts of the company whenever you've got an engineer who's like, I can code up a version of Pac-Man for you that fits in a logo, that sort of thing.
Okay, that's it. I'm like, that's kind of heartens me that that's an opportunity for people to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? If that is your task for the day is to create these things, you've got a pretty awesome job. So that you've got Pac-Man, you got tic-tac-toe, Earth Day quizzes, this new snake game. If snake's your jam, you can go there, you can play snake, all sorts of different things. So spin the wheel, see if you can play all 19. I don't know, you know, what happened when they did the Pac-Man game? Some company like figured out just how much productivity was spent, wasted on playing Pac-Man, and how much that actually cost the economy.
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite Google logo secret, which you can't tell my dad about?
Yes. Does your dad watch This Week in Google? I guess that's the important
question. I'm hoping he doesn't watch this episode. Right. Otherwise, I'm going to break his heart. So there was a wonderful engineer on our team who we decided to do a fun Goodwill thing. And what it was is when we knew it was a person's birthday, because they have their birthday set in their profile, it will show a special birthday logo, which I think is a fantastic idea. Unfortunately, my dad thinks that like it's only for him. He doesn't realize that the logo appears for everybody, and it kind of is, you know, for him, because like a person on the web spam team coded that original incarnation up. But yeah. He thinks, oh, you still have some sway with Google because my birthday and you showed the logo, and I'm like, yeah, Dad, that's for you.
Totally for you. You're special.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it takes to keep Dad happy.
And no one tell Mr. Cutts this. That would break his heart. I'm like, oh.
It's true. He's not on Twitter, right?
He does look for Google news stories of me, so please don't write any Google stories about it. So,
man, I should never have asked this question. That was the wrong thing to do, Jason.
That was my choice. I took responsibility.
All right. Well, keep us posted on that. I'm sure he'll never find out. Because really, that's what Google wants, right? It wants everybody to feel very special and continue using their products and continue sharing everything that you possibly can with them for all of that gain. Why don't we talk a little bit about this? Last week, we were kind of hypothesizing about the rumors of HTC and Google. We had heard at that point that rumors were saying that Google might actually buy HTC's mobile phone division outright. It turned out, you know, I think it was the very next day we found out what actually happened. HTC struck a deal with Google that resulted in Google paying HTC $1.1 billion. And for that sum, Google gets around 2,000 HTC employees for its own hardware division. Not only that, Google gets non-exclusive access to HTC's IP library for their devices. So not an all-out buyout, which, you know, it really, I feel like at the end of last week's episode, I walked away going, that makes a lot of sense. They're totally doing that. No, they're not. It's a stripped down deal as far as that's concerned, but still gives Google, you know, a pretty hearty boost when it comes to their hardware ambitions. You know, it's possible that they might work on their own SoC, possibly integrate even further Tensor processing units, the TPUs, into the devices. We know that that's their plan. So 2,000 employees is nothing to sneeze at. What do you think about this? Did this live up to the hype? I guess we'll find out. But what do you think, Matt?
Or
Stacey, actually.
No, go, Matt, go.
Oh, I'll just say at least it's much, much cheaper than Motorola. And then with that, off to you, Stacey.
I am having crazy connectivity stuff. Sorry, you guys here. Let me see if I can adjust something.
That's okay. We can hear you. It's a okay. Little ramped down.
You can hear me.
We can still hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Fabulous. Okay. So I thought it was, hey, it's cheaper than Motorola and it's cheaper than Nest, and it gets them a lot of credibility in this space. And I'm super excited because I want Google to have hardware that's awesome and user-friendly so they can actually start delivering on this promise of truly contextual information from their kind of AI backend. So I was really excited about this and I'm kind of sad that the next phone I buy won't probably have a lot of this in there. That was my take.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, like, obviously with the next Pixel devices coming out, we know that HTC is involved with one of them, LG is involved with the other, the smaller of the two Pixel devices, the Pixel XL 2, or no, sorry, the Pixel 2, and then there's the Pixel 2 XL, which is the one that LG is involved with. I'm curious to know which one of these two, like being that they're produced by different manufacturers, how similar they actually end up being, which makes me think there's probably going to be some very subtle, if not so subtle, you know, differences between how these devices end up. But of those two devices, does the one produced by HTC end up being the better of the two? And, you know, how does that shape the perspective of this purchase? In, you know, merely a week later after her week or two later after it was announced, the deal was announced.
I will say I have this was the Nexus. So from 2 years ago that was produced by LG, and that was the one with the huge flaw that makes it just stop working at a certain point in time. Mm-hmm. So after two of them that have stopped working, I'm like, hey, you know what? You know what would be good for Google, for me? A phone not made by LG. So that's like HTC. It has good. I've always liked its UI. I would love to see something. I mean, do you remember HTC Sense? That was just great. I would love to see that in a Pixel. Look, some of that influence there is part of either the phone or even Android. I don't know.
I remember HTC Sense back in the day. You know, as far as the overlays were concerned, I was actually pretty into HTC Sense, especially when compared to like what TouchWiz was. But then over the years, you know, I at least for me, and I think a lot of enthusiasts have grown more and more accustomed to kind of like the stripped down, not quite so heavily influenced on the UI side of things, you know, version of Android, not quite so much with the overlay. And even HTC on their own phones has kind of stripped things back a little bit and refined it to a better position, I think.
So I will give one power tip, which is if you do have a Nexus 5X still sitting around the house, and I've got one and I've been a little scared to upgrade it because I'm worried, you know, that upgrading it might cause it to crash or brick itself. But if at least right now, if you go to the Google store, they have Pixels for sale and you can trade in your phone, and Nexus 5X is one of those that you can trade in. I don't know if it'll stick around for whenever the new Pixel 2 stuff comes out, but I'm like, okay, I can hold on to this Nexus 5X a little while longer and then use it as trade-in fodder so that I can get a little bit of a discount.
Yeah.
Mine's totally broken, so I cannot do that.
What happened to your 5X? Oh. How did it break? Did you drop it, or is it like
it's the LG flaw. It just suddenly killed us. It's the second time this happened. The first time Google actually replaced it, but then it happened again. It's okay. I'm like a week away from having hopefully a new phone.
Well, I mean, it's worth checking out. Considering it's kind of tied to some sort of a flaw with the hardware, I think the trade-in value on the 5X, if I remember, I'm trying to find it right now. I'm having a hard time, but I think the trade-in value is somewhere right around like $80 to $100. So, I mean, Google might work with you and knock that off, considering it's a flaw of the actual hardware. 5X has been known to have its bugs and its issues. No, actually, the site is saying Nexus 5X up to $165 in trade-in value. Nothing to sneeze at, because these Pixel devices are going to be expensive.
Yeah,
so you can
get what you can.
Buy the Nexus 5X on eBay for $5 or $10, right. And then
how
use it as a trade-in. Arbitrage.
Yes, exactly. Arbitrage. How can we maximize our savings? So much work to get $100 off. But hey, if that's your intention, there are ways, I'm sure. And by the way, since we're kind of talking about next week's event, if you didn't know, we're definitely going to be doing coverage here on the stream. We'll be doing live coverage. I actually won't be here, but Ron Richards, I believe, with Leo Laporte are going to be on set Wednesday, October 4th, starting at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, before this show next week. So you guys are going to have all the stuff to talk about. I'm sure plenty to keep you fueled throughout the episode and to get excited about. Are either of you like interested in the Pixel Book, the kind of rumored next generation of the Chromebook Pixel that I have here?
Jeff will be.
Yeah. Oh,
we,
I know.
We
Jeff
all know.
Will be.
I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I've got my Chromebook right here. My dad's got a Chromebook. I've got a Chromebook at work just for getting on the guest Wi-Fi there.
Yeah.
So October 4th is like my Christmas, because that's basically what I'll be getting for Christmas. I'll just take one of everything. You know, we'll see about all the various accessories. But yeah, the Pixel Book, it's been a couple of years. I was worried whether we would have a new one or not. And, you know, I hope it's got a real keyboard, not, you know, some magnetic attachment latch doohickey, because sometimes you want a real keyboard.
Yes. No, I completely agree. I've been holding out because this is the first generation. We talked about this a little bit last week, but I mean, it's pricey. It's a pricey up, you know, next generation. You okay with that? Do you find the Pixel line to be worth the upgraded cost compared to others?
Whenever you make a user story for Pixel Books and Chromebooks, like, there's probably a picture of me right there, like, you know, two-factor authentication and security keys, right, and all that sort of stuff. It's right down my alley. So
needless to say, you're all in. You're all in.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more information about the new Pixel devices themselves. We have now multiple sources to different publications, including Android Police and also to VGR and a few others, that are saying just a few tidbits, basically. Both of the devices are going to have stereo front-facing speakers. That, I'm guessing, is to, you know, at least in some ways, will make up for the fact that there is no headphone jack. You're going to need a dongle in order to do that. But you get stereo front-facing speakers, so yay. Also, software-based portrait mode, so doing the kind of dynamic fading of the background or blurring of the background, keeping the foreground in focus, kind of similar to DSLR techniques that you can do. But this wouldn't be done with a dual camera. I have the Note 8 right here, and you can do that sort of thing, but, you know, it requires the dual camera array on the back in order to do that. And the iPhone 8 Plus does this with dual cameras. A lot of them do it with dual cameras. Apparently, these Pixel devices are going to have single camera and still be able to do this through software. We'll see how well that's done. I don't know. I'm a little hesitant on that one, because I feel like that's a lot. Computationally, that's a lot to pull off and make it look actually really good. But
if anyone could do it, Google. I trust. I mean, Photos is such an amazing product, and
that's true.
Constantly surprised. Like, even their scanning technology that's all software, and it's like magic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. This is a good point. Photos is by and large one of my favorite all-time kind of Google apps and services, and that's because they do such amazing things with their computational stuff on the back end. And yeah, so I guess from that perspective, who's to say that they can't pull it off and make it look good? Also, music recognition from the lock screen. So think Shazam style recognition, but that's happening live on your lock screen. So if you happen to be somewhere and you're like, hey, I like this song, you just look at your lock screen and then you realize it's Justin Bieber and then you burn your phone. and you're like, wait a minute, did I just say I don't know? The world is ending for me.
Despacito.
So that's either a feature or a bug, depending on how you look at it. Always on display, squeezable frame that we kind of knew about. And yeah, I'm sure a whole lot more. I'm hoping a whole lot more. At this point, we know so many things, or we think we know so many things through the leaks, that there's just no surprise left in the world anymore.
It's like looking at your Christmas presents before Christmas morning. I mean, it really it's terrible.
It really
is. I used to do that. So I know this feeling of disappointment really well. I'm like, oh, this is so familiar. But in all honesty, I mean, what would you like to see? I sit there and I think about my phone and I'm like, you know, it does pretty much everything I want it to do. And the things I want it to do, like float in the air after me. So when I'm not wearing pockets, I still have access to it. You know, that's probably not going to be in this issue. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I have a hard time sometimes like analyzing how, like I have how I feel about these announcements because I do what I do. And then I have a hard time analyzing how I would feel if I wasn't in the position that I am, where I review a lot of phones, I talk about technology all the time. Like, how would I actually feel? What would I feel like I really need out of another phone? If I had last year's Pixel and this next Pixel is coming out, what would it take to kind of move the needle and make me feel like I need to buy this? And I think if I was just using it like, you know, just a regular everyday user, I'd still be very satisfied with my current Pixel. It's a pretty great device.
It is a good device, but I would so give up an extra millimeter or two in order to have more battery life. It feels like many people are like, look, the bezels are so thin and all that sort of stuff. I'm like, I just want a phone that will always make it through the day and into karaoke that night, because turns out you can do karaoke in DC. But all I'm saying is like, you know, you want to be able to make sure that phone can make it through the concert or whatever it's that you're going to. And after a year, the battery life always tends to go down a little bit. So whether it's more battery or, you know, the ability to swap out a battery, that would be pretty nice. I'd take that over being waterproof. How often do you go swimming with your phone?
I drop my phone in bodies, not bodies of water. Well, sometimes bodies of water. It's a hard thing to learn not to put your phone into your front pocket. You know, I would have learned it by now, but
The problem with that is you have learned it for like 95% of the time, but it's that one time that you lapse. That is the time that it goes for a dunk, goes for a swim. Definitely been there. I'm happy to hear that these are probably going to be, water and dust, protected. I have a better IP rating, in that regard, but, yeah, I don't know. I've been pretty satisfied with my Pixel. But of course, I will, you know, be eager to see what they have and probably get it, because, hey, we talk about this stuff all the time on the network. It's kind of what we do here. hey, what did you think about the Jacquard news? Project Jacquard, which is Google's, I guess it was two or 3 years ago at Google I/O, Google showed off with its ATAP division, which is kind of its experimental technology division. Project Jacquard, which is essentially fabric that has conductive electronics interwoven into the fabric. So you can do things like make the sleeve, which is the case with the Levi jacket here, make the sleeve touch sensitive. So it can connect to and sync with your phone so that in this case, while you're riding your bicycle around New York City, instead of having to like look at your phone to switch songs, you just brush your sleeve and it switches to the next track. Well, now we're finally seeing the fruits of all of that effort with a $350 jacket called Levi's Commuter Trucker Jacket. The non-tech version costs $148. This is the one that has Project Jacquard interwoven into the sleeves. And I got to ask you guys, $350 worth it? Is this a jacket that you would buy? What do you think? I take that as a no.
That's a tough sell.
Okay. So who, you know what I would buy? And here's, I would buy actually Jacquard, probably not interwoven into my couch because my couch is going to last for, you know, hopefully like 10 years, maybe longer. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little doubtful of the technology, but like a little flap that I could stick on my couch, like a little couch doily that has this capability. That might be kind of fun. But in a jacket, that kind of cost for, no, I'm much more excited about actually Apple's AirPod plus its watch for something like that, where I can just ask Siri to do something for me, or, right, you know, get Google so I can just talk to it while I'm biking. That feels much more reasonable.
I like the idea of a Google doily.
A Google doily.
Go on the record with that.
Well, yeah. And it's also the case that, like, for $350, you're locked into one look, and maybe you really enjoy Springsteen, or maybe that really fits with, you know, your personal fashion statement. But if I had a Google doily, then I could, you know, or Google, you know, just a piece of fabric you could wear, like when you're running, or a headband or something, then you could, you know, you could have it be modular.
Oh, right.
Jacquard sweatbands. Oh my gosh, you guys. That's what we need.
Go like this. Man,
well, I'm working hard. And you
I was like thinking headbands.
Wonder Twin Power Activate.
Yeah.
That would work too, actually. Man, there's a whole lineup here. Do we think that the potential of Jacquard will take it that far? I mean, this is the first product. It took a long time. Now, mind you, they say they waited until this fall. They probably could have released it sooner, but the fashion industry works on a different timetable, right? This is a jacket that's perfect for the fall season, so they kind of had to wait until now to release it, and it definitely has a very specific target audience, you know, of a bicyclist, essentially. But, I mean, do we see Jacquard going in large numbers to other types of wearables, or is this one of those projects, one of those Google projects that it's neat that they did it, it's neat that they tried it, but probably not going to see much more of it?
I don't know if you saw this story. I think it was on the Rundown about it. You can't wash it more than 10 times.
Yes.
So that feels like maybe actual clothing isn't the right venue. Although, you know, I don't know if I've washed my jackets 10 times.
Yeah, that's my question. Yeah.
So fair, but if there's a durability question about it, it's very expensive to pay for $35 between washing. So again, clothes may not be the right form factor. I don't think doilies probably are either, but trying to figure out some sort of transitional, a place to put fabric, connectivity in fabric is actually a really cool idea. And I think it'd be interesting in like cars, like the upholstery in cars, maybe. Armrests and furniture again. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, as far as like embedding it into things that aren't clothes, it would have to be embedded into something like a car. Actually makes a whole lot of sense because you're only ever really sitting in that driver's seat. Like there's always someone sitting in the driver's seat. So having a panel, you know, that is responsive in that way, like it's always going to get used because there's no other way to do it. Like a couch or a sofa, actually, prime example. If you had connectivity built into the armrest of a sofa, that only works if you're sitting on that side of the sofa. If you're on the other side, it's way more inconvenient for you to have to get up and go over there and do the thing.
Wait, who says you can't build it on both arms? Come on.
I suppose so.
We're weaving technology into fabric here. Come on.
That's true. It's a good point. What do you think, Matt?
Well, and there's a $50 kit called Makey Makey that lets you hook up, you know, two alligator clips to almost anything like bananas, and then you can use that as a sensor input. So I feel like if you could make the fabric be, you know, compatible with a system like that, you know, so it's like a little label like Scotchgard, except it's, you know, controllable fabric or something like that, then, yeah, you got it on both sides of the couch. You could have it in the upholstery on the car. It just doesn't feel like you got to lock it into one platform of a particular item of clothing. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, it feels very neat that you're able to do this. I just don't know how essential it is, but maybe I'm not the right person to think about, like, you know, the future of technology in that regard, right? Like when I think about it embedded into a couch, I'm like, well, what do I need that for? I either use my voice, or, you know, voice is actually very convenient now that I have my Google Home in the living room. If I really need to turn off the lights or turn on the TV, I can do it with my voice. Do I choose to? No, because I always have that remote there that does everything that I need it to do, and that just is fine. But maybe that's just me looking through now lens, remote. Not later lens. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So for the people who lose their remotes all the time,
perfect.
It's now your couch.
Your couch is now your remote. Yes.
I like exactly. That.
The biggest Very remote convenient. You have in your home is your couch. Let's hope you don't replace your couch very often. And also, you know, washing your couch. How many washes until it stops working?
How many times are you going to have to update the firmware on your couch? Or,
that's
you know,
what I'm worried about.
Yeah, my couch has malware, so...
Actually, what this means, though, is that in the future, we will have to plug our couches into the wall socket.
Yes.
This is a thing we are not used to yet. We get a couch, we need a wall socket to plug it into, otherwise that technology is not going to work. It needs to be powered somehow.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be energy harvesting. Like, there's no kinetic energy on your couch.
No, you're just sitting there.
and then the next generation, you know, they'll have all these features built into the couch. And so you'll have your kids telling you, well, have you rebooted your couch? And like,
right,
no,
my couch
how do I
crashed.
Do that? Control, alt, delete on your couch. It's a pain. It's a pain.
Man, I don't like the future at all. The future all sounds right, inconvenient.
So We're back to doilies. That's really what it boils down to. Grandma's Google doily.
All right. I like that. I think that's a good direction. Real quick here, one thing that we didn't touch on that I doubt this is going to appear next week, but this is new information that we have about Google's plans to work with Google Home and kind of spruce it up with a larger premium model. Apparently, they're working on a version that has stereo speakers. I don't know how you do that in that small form factor. Maybe it's not a small form factor. Maybe it's like a boom box. That would actually be kind of cool. The Google Home Max is apparently the internal name for it. That's tentative at this point. It would be to challenge the Sonos Play 3 system. Would be using premium materials, premium build quality. And I mean, I guess this makes sense. And we'll talk about Amazon's big stream of announcements that kind of ties into what Google is probably doing as well. It seems like they're both kind of building out their portfolio around this type of hardware. But do you think a stereo Google Home is necessary? Maybe it's not as much stereo as it is hi-fi version of Google Home. Either of you want that? Do you use it in that way?
I'm a skeptic. I'm like... I've had this argument with friends who have Sonos and they've spent like thousands of dollars on their Sonos and they're like, I can walk from room to room and the audio is seamless. And I'm like, you know what else walks from room to room with you is your phone. And it's really not that hard to like play some audio on your phone. Maybe it'll have stereo speakers on the front and then you can get good audio that way. And it's just, you know, it's always with you. It's always easy to have your music with you as opposed to weird Bluetooth connectivity and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I tend to be a fan of like, I'll just have one device and carry it with me rather than like blanketing my home in speakers. But that's just me.
Wait. So you listen to actual real music on your phone and you just walk around with it and you put the phone down and you listen to the music coming from it?
Yeah, I'm also a barbarian. Like, I, you know, eat out of the can and, you
no,
know,
no,
so don't listen to me.
No, I'm like, I'm just making sure I understood this. I'm like, so you just, okay.
So wait, this happens?
Yeah. There's zero configuration. You have one device. It just goes. And that's why I'm so incredibly annoyed that they're like, oh, by the way, you don't need a headphone jack on your phone. I'm like, that is literally the only jack I need on my phone is the headphone jack. I'm like, oh, it's got to be thinner. I'm like, no, it doesn't need to be thinner. It needs more battery life. Sorry. Okay. I'm into rant mode.
Oh, so you listen on a headset?
I do both.
Okay. Okay. So that is, I'm going to say it right here. You're kind of weird. I mean,
I have no problem
with
being
subpar audio experience.
I would personally opt for, yeah, better speakers allowing it to play in rooms. But I also see the other side of this, at least with my kids. We have a Nexus 5X that I have repurposed. I've set it up with Family Link. So the only thing it can do is it can run Google Music on it. And that's because my kids, if they get a hold of a screen, they will never leave it. But I want them to have the ability to always play music anytime. And so it's like, well, how do I get rid of all the other screen things, but still let them do what is today's, you know, equivalent to a boombox, which is, you know, have all your music in the cloud streaming on a service. So I give them that. And that tends to work. But they know how to connect it to the speakers throughout the house. They know how to do this, yet they always choose to just play it from the phone, and the phone goes with them everywhere, and that's just good enough. So I see both sides of this. I would not choose to do that, but it's certainly convenient. MP3s won out, right?
Convenient. Yeah, my MP3s are like 6 kilobits. It's fine, you know.
So, okay. I on the other hand, am super stoked. Matt, you kind of lost credibility on the audio question. I feel like, I'm like, oh, okay. So there's a couple things here. One is this feels like, okay, yes, competing with HomePod, but also on October 4th, Sonos is going to make a big product announcement as well. Oh. Presumably new hardware, new speakers, but also the ability to work with Amazon Echo. So keeping that in mind too, and then, yes, we just got all the Echo stuff that we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
this feels like it's necessary. I mean, the Google Home isn't it's not terrible, but it's not great. It's not the only speaker I would ever need. So, yeah, I guess I'd buy it. I don't really use my Home very much, though, so I'm kind of – I don't know. I use the Echo far more than I use the Home.
Yeah, and I do not have an Echo, so I don't know the point of comparison. But I do know that probably 80% of what I use our Google Homes for is playing music. You know, because it's just, you know, it's easy to just fire it off. Before I got the Google Home, I've been telling myself for years, because I'm a big music fan, but I had fallen out of the habit of listening to music. I had just gotten really used to, you know, we do podcasts. So I started listening to podcasts, and then I started having podcast guilt because all the music that I spent my childhood and, you know, younger years listening to, like, I just stopped listening to it. Then we got a Google Home, and now I listen to music all the time. So it's become one of the main reasons. So I would totally get one of these. If it makes it sound better, sure. Although the current one is totally fine too. Maybe it's not the best sound in the world, but it's good enough for what I need. It's better than playing it through my phone.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to call it now. This is the new minimalism trend where people are like, I just spent 4 hours of my weekend configuring my Sonos or whatever, but the Bluetooth still doesn't work and I can't get this app to work.
Okay, stop right there. That's the beauty of Sonos. It takes like 10 minutes. I have 6 Sonoses. I am one of those people who spent lots of money. And I would, you know what I would love though? What if like on Sonos, Google and Sonos teamed up and they were like, by the way, just tell Google Assistant to play, you know, Beyonce on your Sonos, living room Sonos, and that happened. Because that would be freaking amazing.
Is there no integration between Google Home and Sonos right now? I don't know because
there's
I don't have
there's
Sonos.
No integration between Sonos and anyone. Basically, no official integration.
I'm kind of done with like, you know, this company has this territorial, you know, choice towards this other company. And so just do it on your phone, man. It always works on your phone.
On your phone, man. Just works.
I never have my phone. This is a girl problem, but it's a real one. It's a legit problem. I don't have pockets and everything, so the phone sometimes it's not next to me.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that happens to me. That's too. Fair.
Sometimes I do that on
right
purpose.
On.
Set it on the fridge and leave because you know what?
Wow.
That way I could live my life without being notified to death. But that's just me. You know, it's right back to the minimalism thing that you're talking about, Matt. Sometimes you just need to step away and simplify a little bit. Let's take a quick break and thank the sponsor of this episode, and then we'll get back to talking more about Google and also Amazon's big announcements. We keep mentioning that, so we should probably get to that at some point. But first, let's take a minute to thank Casper, the sponsor of this episode. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. We have 2 Caspers in our house and a 3rd mattress that is not a Casper, and it is on our list to replace that with a Casper. That's how good it is, because anytime we end up having to lay down on that other mattress, we're just like, man, this is uncomfortable. It's just not the same. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and then passing the savings directly to the consumer, you. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Casper's made of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's exactly what you want. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature throughout the night. And I can attest to that part especially. It does really well in that regard. A Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support. And you can buy it easily online, like you're used to buying so many other things, completely risk-free. We've had our Casper mattress now for, like, I think a couple of years. We've had it in our master. And we also got one in one of our girls' bedroom. We all love it. It's super soft. It's comfortable. Casper really understands, and this is pretty important, how important it is for truly testing, truly trying out that mattress in a reality sort of setting, like in your home. You're going to spend a third of your life on a mattress, so it better be comfortable. So Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. So you don't have to lie down in a showroom and make that split decision, which is what we did on the first mattress that we now hate. And did you know, statistically, lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation to whether it is the right bed for you? It's really hard to make that determination. You only really get that by sleeping on it, day in, day out. And then you really understand why it's so great. Casper recently introduced the Casper Wave mattress, which features a natural geometry support system and a new top layer. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental protection standards and are made in the USA. Free shipping and returns to the US and Canada, and now the UK as well. Get a Casper mattress today. You can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/twig. Promo code TWIG. That's TWIG is the promo code there. That's casper.com/twig with the promo code TWIG, and you'll save an additional $50 off a mattress purchase. Terms and conditions do apply there, but check it out. Go to casper.com/twig and use the promo code TWIG at checkout, and you'll get that discount. We thank Casper for their support of This Week in Google. All right, I'm sure we've got... Hey, well, let's just jump over to Amazon. We keep talking about it. This way we don't have to dance around it anymore. I feel like this was a very surprise announcement on Amazon's part. I had no idea that there was an event. Maybe I was just out of the loop. But then suddenly, boom, boom, boom. It was like 5 million products were being announced. And we've got them all here. Well, we don't have them in studio, but we've got them to talk about. Amazon showed off first a new smaller Echo device. It's wrapped in cloth. It's not quite half the size, but it's probably like, I don't know, it probably cuts off a third of the size of the original Echo. But it's wrapped in cloth, so maybe it fits into your home a little bit better. $99, you could get a 3-pack if you like buying in packs for $250. You just add 3 to the cart, and then you get a $50 discount applied there. And apparently this, well, with a 3-pack, obviously, it offers the Echo's new multi-room functionality, so you can get these between rooms like we were just talking about. Matt will not do that. Many others will. And then you can also make free calls in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, as well as 911 calls. I'm assuming that's because you can plug the phone into this, which that's what you can do with another device they announced, which we'll talk about in a second. But smaller Echo, $99, so lowering the entry point for kind of what used to be premium Echo functionality. What you think, Stacey? I know that you are an Echo user. What do you think about this?
Man, I'm super excited. Now, so I looked at this and I was kind of bummed that I do not have like the wood grained, the faux wood grained Echo. I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. In my house, I've got two Dots and two normal sized Echoes. And so I'm running out of rooms. I could buy one more and put it in. I've got one more room I could use it in. So I probably would buy it, but I may actually go for, there's two other products that I'm really excited about. So
okay,
the Plus, let's talk about the Plus.
All right. Well, the Plus is, it's kind of hard to call. I mean, well, okay. So the Plus is the more premium of the devices that they showed off today, although it's still cheaper than the current Echo. Like the original Echo. It's $149, which is $30 cheaper than the original Echo. But the Echo Plus retains the bigger form factor of the original. They've kind of redesigned a little bit of the material and everything to make it look a little sleeker and everything, a little bit more refined. It has a built-in smart home hub for smart home control. It also includes higher-end sound and components for those who play their music through an Echo and not on their phone. It ships with... Sorry, Matt. I can't help it.
It's all good.
Ships with...
I'm proud.
Yes. Wear it like a badge of honor. It ships with a Hue light bulb in the box, which I think is there to kind of prove that this is meant to control, to be a hub for your smart home. Stacey, do you know what is the standard that's built into here? Because I mean, I have Hue at home and it requires a Hue light bulb hub.
The Hue uses Zigbee, but it uses, I think, Zigbee HA. So Zigbee is kind of a pain because there were many variations on this standard software profile. So things could get kind of wacky between things. But the fact that there is no hub, they're basically saying that, hey, the Hue guys are like, yeah, this thing talks Zigbee and we're going to just talk to it and you don't need a hub. As someone who has, I kid you not, 10 different hubs, I can see if I bought one of these, I could get rid of like 6 of them, which totally worthwhile because my little server closet is, it's the hub home. And I would love this. And, you know, everybody who listens to my show would be excited too because I give away my hubs when I'm done with them. So they'd be like, yeah, I get a Wink Hub. I get a Smart Things. You get a Philips Hue.
So basically this hub is going to replace multiple other hubs that you have serving different purposes.
Yeah. Okay. That would be my hope. I would lose the software functionality. So like, and this is something to think about. Like if I had this and I had the Philips Hue bulb, would I use the Philips Hue app or would I just run it through the Amazon Echo?
Right.
And that's a real question for people who are partnering too, because Philips Hue wants my email address. It wants all this data and information for itself. But if it's going through the Amazon Echo, how does it feel about that? I don't know.
They packed in a Hue bulb in the package. So they're okay.
Well, yeah.
With
so that are they? I mean, well, did Amazon actually, because, you know, Amazon doesn't always ask about this stuff. It's like, hey, we had some Hue bulbs in inventory. Let's toss these in.
That's true. Sweeten the deal.
I assume that's not what happened, but you know, I would not put it past Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. What do you think, Matt? You have Google Home, I'm assuming, throughout your home, but what do you think?
I do have a Google Home. I also have the Amazon equivalent. I am breaking new pioneering waves in dumb home technology. So, you know, just the amount of work to try to control a lot of this stuff. I'm like, you know what? I'll just get up and turn off the light switch myself, you know? So I'm like adding a skill to this and then you got to reboot. So I'm playing around with going super, super dumb and just, you know, trying to use those cycles for other things these days. So we'll see whether that works out. I'll report back on the experiment. But I got to say, like, there's so many devices that Amazon announced today. It's like they've just decided to make Echo its own like consumer brand, you know, like the Echo buttons sound pretty cool, but it doesn't sound like they have anything to do with sound.
So. No, so the Echo buttons, this is kind of a strange one. If you were ever hoping to turn your Echo into a game show, we've all been there. Now you can. These buttons are for interacting with Echo devices for family. Well, not just family games, but for games. Trivia was one example that they used. So basically, you get a 2-pack for $20, and that'll release timed with the holidays. But it's kind of like that. What was it? Staples had their big like
easy button
or whatever. It's kind of like that, but it works with the Echo devices. So that you can kind of ring in, it has a little an LED light that lights it up. I don't know. So that one came out of nowhere, but I mean, I can understand. Like that would probably actually be very fun. It's the first in Amazon's Alexa gadgets lineup, so there will be more in this gadgets category.
I think this is awesome, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah, tell us why.
So I love gameplay. My daughter and I, actually, we do the Jeopardy skill. We also do Would You Rather, because she's a tween girl, and that's like the best game for tween girls. So I can see us having a total fun. It's like totally a stocking stuffer kind of idea, right? It's $20 mm-hmm. for a two-pack?
For two. Or is it 40? Yeah. No, $20
for two. Yeah, so $20 for two. That's nothing. The other thing is, if you're a clever developer, you could start building this into skills. So, you know, Amazon's got their IoT button, but that's $20 and you have to be pretty adept to code like a skill for your IoT button. But like, I spent forever doing a skill for Did I Feed the Dog? So in our house, you know, who knows who feeds the dog? You know, it's just a common question. So we actually put a motion sensor on the dog food container. So when we lifted it, you know, it would send a text to everybody. But I wanted to do an Echo skill for the longest time to be like, this girl, did we feed the dog? And she would tell you yes or no. With this button, I could stick it right next to the dog food. Whoever opens and feeds the dog, they just hit the button. And then when we ask that question to the Echo, not each other, we'll get an answer. So I feel like there's a lot of really cool opportunities for being able to press a button to indicate to your personal assistant that lives in your house that something's happened, right?
Absolutely. And then, I mean, technically, you know, even this button has an LED in it. Maybe it changes to a different color when you do that. And that way, if you don't ask, but you just happen to be standing there, you see that it's blue, you go, oh, okay, already done. I know.
Even smarter. Look mm-hmm. at you.
Well, you know, I am a developer. No, I'm not. Not at all.
Are the dishes not dirty or guy. Are they clean?
Yes, yeah. Right. Boop. Okay. So then, but that turns this, like Amazon really built this as being for games. But I mean, really, maybe the game part is just an example of some of the unique ways that you can use this and let developers run wild with it and see what they come up with. I like that. Let's see here. What else do we have? We have the Echo Spot, which is an alarm clock with Amazon's voice assistant baked in, as all of these things have. A 2.5-inch circular screen device. It has the ability, well, you know, so it's got a full screen there. You can view cameras, hold video calls, of course. Watch video news. I'm sure you can watch videos on there if you really wanted to, although the circular screen might make that weird. But it has the ability to control your smart home, Bluetooth capability, 3.5-millimeter stereo cable if you want to take your audio out into your home, you know, into your bedroom, let's say, have speakers and a setup there so that you wake up to nice, pleasing music, maybe Katy Perry or someone.
Woo-hoo!
I don't know. $129, ships in December, pre-order now. Was this the other device that you were really excited about, Stacey?
So I was excited about this, and then I learned about the camera feature. And then I was like, oh, if I could do a video call on this, that means there's a camera in it. That means right. I don't want to put it next to my bed.
Right.
I mean, I do actually trust Amazon quite a bit, but I don't trust anybody that much unless there's like a hard shutter for it.
Right.
But it's so cute.
Yeah. I mean, it is cool. I mean, yeah, maybe you get that and you throw the little of the tape over the camera, and then, you know, if you really need to use it.
But then you eliminate the cool, cute design.
That's,
I mean,
true.
It's
you so cheapify
someone
it.
Someone called it Chumby for it's Amazon's Chumby, and it is. It's
yeah.
It's exactly that. So I'm like, welcome back, Chumby.
We missed you.
It's like you were never gone.
No, the button is my favorite thing. The little LED game buttons.
Okay.
Awesome.
And not to mention inexpensive, so you can get a ton of those. And everything that I read about the Spot is that it's considered like a discounted Amazon Show. So if you had reservations about Amazon Show with the camera and everything, I mean, coupled with the alarm clock, that means it's almost destined to end up in your bedroom. So, you know, ask yourself whether you're okay with the fact that there's an internet-connected camera hanging out in your bedroom. And if you're okay with that, then great, go for it. If not, you know, maybe think twice. Yeah, I know. You put it that way.
I wonder, could you use it like a baby monitor?
I'm sure
you could. I mean, again, I'm just thinking, could you – so you would drop in on it, but it wouldn't be always – I'm just thinking through this. No, you shouldn't use it as a baby monitor. Never mind.
I – I mean, you know, people that is one of the use cases that they touted, is that you can check in on, you know, like a camera in the baby's room to see how baby is doing. So I suppose that's one way to do it. It's just, you know, you have to ask yourself the standard questions about a video camera that's always connected to the internet, and how safe is our IoT stuff anyways? Do we really know? We think we know.
Yes, it's not safe.
Okay. Well, we know it's not safe.
Yes. Stacey on IoT would know the answer to that question.
I feel very comfortable telling you that you probably should avoid it.
All right, there we go. There's your advice. The Echo Connect is a standalone box that plugs into a standard phone jack. What is that, first of all? And then also into an Echo device of your choosing to bring telephone calls to the Echo speaker. So we talked a little bit about how the new smaller Echo, and I'm assuming the Echo Plus, have the ability to do phone calls through there. This is a box that allows your other, maybe your outdated, your older Echo device to also manage phone calls. And being that it's coming from your line, your landline, directly through the plug, you get caller ID, you get the capability of doing 911 if you need to. That's something that Google Home's phone calling functionality is not able to do. So a little bit better there, but kind of a little clunky also because you're plugging it into the wall. I don't know. Do people still do that?
I'm sure they do.
I don't even have a phone jack in my house. So when we built our house in 2012, we did not put any copper. So I'm like,
you're not getting one of these then.
I am not getting one of those.
What were you going to say, Matt?
I was just going to say, like, I recently filled out a form and they're like, yeah, just fax this back to this number. And I'm like, look, I may be old school, but I'm not an actual caveman. Like, where are we going to have a fax line with a landline where we can, come on, scan that and email that to you?
Yeah, same difference, right? I mean, it's literally the same thing, except it's coming to you through your email and not through a phone line. But I'm still scanning it the way I would if I faxed it, because that's how you do it now. Yeah.
DC still has fax. Like, I remember, like, 2 years ago applying for press credentials for a Senate hearing, and they wanted me to fax something in, and I was like, huh.
DC is pro fax.
There's a lot of things that technology has not completely saturated DC yet. Let's just put it like that.
You know, Kinko's, if you ever need, if you need a fax line, Kinko's.
Yeah.
Or is it the FedEx store now, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's FedEx store now. Yeah. I believe. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last time I actually set foot in a Kinko's or a FedEx store. It's been a long time. Probably the last time I needed to send a fax, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so probably not selling a whole lot of those, but Amazon also updated, man, they just keep coming, the Fire TV to include 60 frames per second 4K. The previous version had 4K. Now it's 60 frames per second, but it also now includes HDR support, high dynamic range. It's a small flat dongle. It hangs from the HDMI port behind or aside from your TV. And HDR 10 support for HDR, not Dolby Vision. Dolby Atmos support for audio, which, curiously, Apple TV 4K, which Apple announced a couple of weeks ago, swaps that. It actually supports Dolby Vision for HDR and HDR 10 for audio. So, you know, they're just a little bit different. But this one's costs, I think, a decent amount less. It's $70 pre-order now for October 25th. Either of you Fire TV users, that's one set-top box that I've never gotten, though I've heard really good things about it. But I've never tested it out myself.
Mm. Chromecast and Roku.
Yeah.
Chromecast for me.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me too.
Which is weird, though, because now with the Fire TV, with the Echo, you can do the cool stuff that you can do with Google Home in the Chromecast, which is like play, what's it called? Big Little Lies or what's that? I'm terrible. Okay, play Game of Thrones on HBO and it'll do it for you. So that's actually a really cool thing to be able to do. Yeah. Again, I'm not going to, I don't want to go and buy, you know, oh, here's my Fire TV, because right now I've got this in my living room, and I just get along, you guys. Are we going to talk about, are we going to let Amazon and Google collide and talk about, what is it? Not playing YouTube on the Echo Show?
Sure. Let's do it right now, in fact. I think that's right.
Well, wait, are we done with all of our Amazon announcements?
I think so. They also had an announcement about BMW bringing their voice assistant to BMWs in 2018, but that's really all there is to that. Mid-year next year, they're going to have far-field microphones throughout the cab, inside the vehicle, and have it integrated into the infotainment system. Not as flashy, but interesting that all of these things are being embedded and baked into the interior of vehicles. I'm wondering what that means long term for the resale value of vehicles. Like 5 years from now, will that still be a thing? And will it just be like, oh, really? You've got that in there? Yeah, that like fizzled and died a couple of years ago. Let's hope not. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Built-in 8-track.
Yes, exactly. Who knows? At some point, it'll be outdated. How long is that point? Who knows at this point? But yes, let's talk about the Amazon Echo Show. This was not announced on stage, obviously. But there's basically a brewing, let's call it a kerfuffle between...
Well, I was going to go a brouhaha.
A brouhaha works as well. A brouhaha, kerfuffle, the same category, I would say. But it's YouTube and Amazon are basically... There's something going on because YouTube no longer plays on the Echo Show. The Echo Show, of course, is the screened Echo device. It says when you try to do that, it says Google doesn't support YouTube on the device anymore. Google doesn't support YouTube on the device anymore. They don't just say this feature is not supported. They call Google out. Verge contacted Amazon, who said Google made the change based on what they said was no technical reason. And they also said that's very disappointing. It hurts their customers, both of their customers. Google's saying that they're not living, how they're implementing YouTube on the device violates the terms of service that they've spelled out for YouTube. So no YouTube on your Echo Show. I don't know if it's available through a browser on the device, maybe, but...
There isn't a browser on the Echo Show.
Well, then no. Then no, it's not. What do you think, Stacey?
Matt opened his mouth, so I was going to let him go. He was like...
The only thing I was going to say is that it reminds me in 2013, there was a little bit of a brouhaha or a kerfuffle, however you want to say it, about Microsoft wanted to get YouTube on Windows Phone.
Yes.
And it's a very sort of similar sounding argument where Microsoft was like, oh, they're blocking us. And Google was saying something along the lines of, you're scraping us when you're supposed to use this API. And so we'll see what happens, whether they can come to a common understanding. I mean, it's definitely the case as a consumer, no matter what device you have, you want to be able to, see all of your shows and watch all of your stuff. But like if I'm on Amazon, I would also expect to be able to buy a Chromecast and an Apple TV. And it sounds like sometimes Amazon, even though you can buy almost anything on Amazon, doesn't sell, some devices from other manufacturers. So it's, I understand why a company will have this sort of reaction on both sides, but as a consumer, you just want everything to work together.
Yeah.
So
go for it.
So Kevin actually brought this up on our show. So apologies if you listen to both Twig and our show, but we talked about it and he said that it's possible that Google is reacting to Amazon, not because Amazon uses a forked version of Android, that they are maybe not agreeing or they're maybe not implementing the right licensing terms for playing it on a not Android-based device. But so that was his thought, and he brought up the Windows thing as well. So I haven't had a chance to email Google and test that theory, but it sounds very credible. So I was like, okay.
Well, and YouTube is a separate part of Google/Alphabet. And so like there is... I remember seeing a YouTube app for, I forget if it was the TiVo or the Xbox or the Xbox One, but like if you work at YouTube, you want as many people as possible to be able to watch YouTube. So hopefully we'll get more details about exactly where the breakdown happened and whether it can be fixed up.
I hope so, because my gosh, my daughter and I watch our Corgi videos at breakfast time on the Amazon Show. And that is a treasured time. And YouTube has the best Corgi videos.
That's true. We all know this. Everybody knows this.
Even the Queen of England knows that.
I was going to say, even dogs know it. Even corgis know it. Yeah, that's a really good point. I had not considered that, Stacy, and by extension also Kevin. He's the smart one. That the Fire tablets don't have any of Google's apps on it because they don't adhere to those things. It's a forked version. So therefore, if you want to get YouTube on there, like I always think of YouTube, when I think of YouTube, I think of it as being truly cross-platform, like Google's, strategy is YouTube in all the screens and in all the places. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's actually not true when you look at it that way. And Amazon's nothing to sneeze at as far as, the amount of eyeballs that could potentially hit YouTube. It's just YouTube doesn't end up on those devices. If you want to actually install it on there, you have to jump through some hoops. You have to be very specific. You're not getting it through the Amazon App Store. So you have to kind of sideload them yourself. That could be kind of part of what this is all about.
And that's you have to sideload Amazon's video stuff and Amazon's apps. Not all of them, but some of them. The video playing ones, you have to sideload onto an Android handset.
Used to.
Which...
Actually, a couple.
You don't anymore?
No, a couple of weeks ago. This only happened like 2 weeks ago.
My phone died, so I switched.
Amazon just released to the Play Store, Amazon Instant Video, a couple of weeks ago.
Yes!
So you can download it. You can't Chromecast with it because, as we know, Amazon is not very pro Chromecast. Even though it's in the Play Store, you can't Chromecast. You can't even buy a Chromecast on Amazon's site, understand. So
you can't. No. But you can buy a Nest thermostat. That's what boggles my mind. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it's weird. The strange lines that are drawn in the sand here.
You cannot buy a Google Home there either, in case you were wondering.
Oh, interesting. Aww. Well, and then is that Google? Is that Google saying no? Well, no, probably not. Google would love to have their home sold in all the places, I would think.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you can walk into an Apple store, though, or buy a Google Home or an Amazon Echo either. So I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
Well, you can't buy an Apple TV on Amazon either. So I think it's probably Amazon that's saying no Chromecast, no Apple TV for you.
Right. So. All right. Hey, let's take a break. Thank the sponsor of this episode of This Week in Google. And then we'll talk about more stuff. We've got more stuff to talk about. Before we do that, let's thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever gone through the process, if you've ever gone through the mortgage process, you probably already know all too well how challenging it can actually be, kind of figuring out all the pieces of the puzzle, pulling all the information in that's required. It's not an insignificant thing that you're doing when you're securing a mortgage. So, it makes sense that all of this work, all this information is needed, but it could be better. The whole process could be improved. And the folks at Quicken Loans understood this. And that's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details involved, and you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button, so you're not going to a million different places to find that information. They make it super easy. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or even your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds based on your income, your assets, your credit. Rocket Mortgage analyzes all of the home loan options for which you qualify, takes a look at everything, and then finds the one that's just right for you and your situation. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. That's rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of This Week in Google. Let's see here. Oh, real quick before we move out of Amazon, because we missed this last week, and I'm actually stoked that you are both here because we can talk about it a little bit. So this is a little bit old news, but it's worth talking about because the intersection between Amazon and Google on this one is very strong. Financial Times reported that Amazon has its own smart glasses in the works. With
oh,
here we go again. Bone conduction for audio, so no in-ear design. And if I remember correctly, the original Google Glasses or Google Glass did that. No screen, no camera. So in many ways, it would be addressing some of the critical components of glass that a lot of people that were critical of it. Were so because of the camera primarily. It would still tether to your smartphone. They're apparently, according to this report anyways, they're creating something that looks more like normal glasses. So not something sci-fi and strange on your face. It would actually look like a regular pair of glasses, connected glasses for firing off audio commands wherever you happen to be. So basically it kind of seems like these are your Alexa glasses. Oops, I said the word. These are your Amazon's voice assistant glasses. Because everywhere you happen to be, you want to talk to Amazon's voice assistant, so you might as well wear these glasses everywhere you go to do that.
So Apple did this so much better with AirPods. If like this is what this is, it's like AirPods is a way to get Siri in your ear, right? So you can talk to her all day, and you can have this without ever pulling out your phone, which is cool, right? Mm-hmm. This is that with glasses. And as someone who wears glasses, I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. But if you don't wear glasses, it's kind of weird. And why wouldn't you just do like AirPods or ear?
In your headphones.
What are they called? Ear sets? Headphones?
Yeah.
Ear sets. Headphones.
Ear pods or in-ear headphones, whatever. Like there's the rumor that Google's possibly going to be releasing something along what you're talking about at next week's event. Man, they're all doing the same stuff, aren't they? I mean, do we want a pair of glasses with a microphone in it? Snapchat did their snap glasses. Now I'm forgetting what they were even. Spectacles. There we go. Thank you, Carson.
Spectacles.
They did their spectacles, and I remember at the time, and myself included, I was like, all right, they did it right. And I realized in retrospect, I was just totally pulled into the hype. Because
they fired their team.
Who cares?
Their whole spectacles team.
Really?
They don't have it anymore. The Information reported that like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I missed that.
No.
Okay. So then that didn't work out so well. I mean, do we need to go into smart glasses territory again? Haven't we done this a couple of times? What do you think?
I just don't understand. If you don't have a screen, why you need glasses? I mean, I'm fine. You don't have a camera, but the screen for a heads up display seems really like an opportunity that they're not taking. I don't know, Matt.
Yeah, until there's a useful screen, I will probably hold off. But I will say, like, if they had glasses that had a useful screen, that's a little bit of the dream, right? Because yeah. I mean, then you could do some pretty amazing things. But I'll be curious to see what this actually turns out to be, because it's Amazon does a very good job of having a clear purpose. Like here's a device where you can plug a phone in and you're able to have a phone line. You know, they don't just throw out devices that don't have a purpose. But I don't quite get what the purpose of this device would be. So maybe that'll become more clear as we get closer or if they release it.
I feel like the Echo Look didn't have a purpose. I think as Amazon starts playing with this stuff, they're getting maybe a little further from things that have a useful function. I don't know. But yes, still, I'm with you.
Well, yeah, it kind of feels like Amazon right now is firmly in the let's throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks territory. Because, I mean, in today's announcements, we're not insignificant, but boy, were there a lot of them. And you have to imagine with that amount of product announced at one time, some of that's going to rise to the top and some of it's going to be like, okay, well, we didn't see a second iteration of that because it just didn't go anywhere. I mean, it's not like Amazon's hurting. So they have the ability to throw all this stuff at the wall. Well, why not do it? I just don't see any purpose for having a pair of glasses that's just a voice assistant microphone, which is kind of what it sounds like it is.
Yeah. Today was the first day where it really felt like Amazon was throwing a bunch of different stuff against the wall. Mm-hmm. And you think about the Nexus Q, you can have a really good idea, really good execution, but the ability to get to people's mind share, is everybody going to learn about what the look is versus the this versus the that? It's a harder sell. So. Yeah.
And it has to be a magical combination of what it actually offers and how much it actually costs, which was the failing of one of the failings of the Nexus Q is, yeah, nobody's going to buy it for that price. It's maybe a great device.
Was the Q that octopus thing? Uh-huh. The black octopus thing that did something with your television?
Yes. And that's pretty, okay. That's pretty much the marketing strategy for it was just what you said there. That's about as obvious as it was at the time.
I thought it was more audio.
Yeah.
But
well, no. So... It's you plug it into your TV.
No, you're right.
It was HDMI. However, it was also partially audio because it had, strangely, it had actual speaker, an amplifier inside of it and speaker outputs to drive a pair of speakers, like, stand up speakers. So it would bypass any amplifier that you're likely to have. And it would act as your amplifier and be your stereo, essentially, for just that stuff, which was just play movies, play TV, YouTube content, and play music. That's all it could do.
I wonder what it's like to be a part of a team where, you know, as soon as it gets announced or pretty shortly after that, you're like, it was a great idea. You worked really hard. It's a beautiful device. Sorry, this Juicero or whatever it is that you've worked on, you know, it's just not going to work out. And then you've got like, well, I made a thing and I made a physical artifact in this world and it's really well designed. It's just the price point isn't right or it doesn't meet what people are looking for or the company just doesn't want to get behind it. That's got to be frustrating.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Chumby.
It all comes back around to Chumby, doesn't it?
And we're back.
It's true, though. You spend all that time. The device, I mean, I have it in my office because we got it, you know, at Google I.O. that year. And I'm proud to have it because I remember when it came out, it was really a symbol of like Google's taking hardware in-house. We designed this all in-house. This is what we're capable of. And it was just, you know, there were parts of the execution, maybe not necessarily with the hardware itself, but there were other parts where you just kind of scratch your head and wondered, why is this so limited in use and why is it three times more expensive than everything else? And why is there an amplifier in there? Is that why it's three times more expensive than everything else? Because I didn't need an amplifier. There were just a lot of questions. But hey, you know, now Google has a lot happening in hardware. So I think the roses that come from a situation like that, those people that worked on that can smell. That's weird. That's a weird way to put this. Is that it leads to other things, right? It got Google through this awkward beginning stage and got them to where they are now, producing a lot of really great hardware that people do.
We all have an ugly adolescence. Yeah. I mean, really.
Yeah. It paved the way. We couldn't get where we were now without having, you know, these sorts of experiences.
Yeah, it's those pimples and
I was like, there's zits and braces. It was the Q.
The Q was zits and braces years, yes.
I wanted to bring this up. It's not a Google thing, but when I was at Cedia, was it 2 weeks ago? I've been all over the place since then. But I saw these because you mentioned the BMW thing, but there were these amplifiers and speakers that were built. You put them in your ceiling. They were made by a company called Origin Acoustics, and they had little Echo Dots. So you would buy the Echo Dots, you would pop it into this little speaker amplifier thing. You would pop that into your ceiling so you'd have a much better speaker. You'd have power for the dot, but then you'd have basically however many speakers you had in your room, you'd have the mics for the echo. So basically it turned your room into like an echo chamber. nice. I thought that was actually kind of a really neat idea. And I'd love to, like, it's a great way to think about using the dot form factor to put, you know, once you start adding context to those rooms, then it becomes really powerful to be like, hey, Madam A, turn off the lights. And if it knew like where you were, then poof, that would happen in that room. I don't know. I just kind of got really excited about that. And I was like, oh, when are we going to see something like that from Google or even Apple for HomeKit? I don't know.
Man,
throwing that out there for you.
That is not an inexpensive upgrade either. The amplifier retails for $1,500. This is like Echo Dot.
This was Cydia. Well, this is Cydia. So this is basically your alternative. There is to buy a fancy speaker to go in your ceiling. Anyway, these are good speakers. They're not speakers.
Got it.
So Matt, you with your phone, probably would not go for this.
I would not. But then I would argue my life would be simpler as a result. So, which would leave me more time to read tech news, like the fact that Bill Gates uses an Android phone.
Very yes. nice. Very nice.
What?
Yeah. Oh,
I couldn't believe that.
Told Fox News Sunday that he now uses an Android phone. He did not mention the model, but he says he has, quote, a lot of Microsoft software on it. Which I'm not not surprising, but Microsoft's been doing a lot in Android. They've just been doing a lot in general, building up their software for what would be competing platforms to its own mobile operating system, if that was really as much of a thing as maybe it used to be. It's not much anymore. But yeah, I mean, I guess not surprising that if he has one, it would be loaded with Microsoft apps. But I guess, you know, my thought on this is Microsoft's made it really easy to be an Android user and still be all in on Microsoft services. And this is one example of that.
It feels like the switch over to Satya Nadella, like I understand how Microsoft would be attached to the Windows platform, but Windows Phone not doing well might ultimately be a really good thing for Microsoft, because they're like, okay, let's get back to our roots, making great software for lots of different devices and lots of different situations. And they have that core competency, you know, the Hyperlapse app. There's a ton of really, not just, you know, the normal bread and butter core apps like Office or what have you, but like it, for me, it's really refreshing to see that this is like another act for Microsoft. And personally, it's one that I really love, because it's like, okay, let's get back to competing on the merits, rather than like, okay, we were able to have this platform and therefore that started us out on second or third base. And I think if you look at Microsoft in the last few years, they have done some really incredible stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the quality.
And Azure is a super awesome platform. Like, I know that AWS gets all the credit for lots of things, but there are a lot of businesses on Azure. There are a lot of really interesting things, like their confidential compute effort. I thought that was really cool. So, you know, they're building a very credible tech company still, or they have a credible tech company still.
Know, Microsoft, you're going to be okay. The scrappy upstart Microsoft's going to do all right, I think, in the long run.
Well, and it's a switch, you know, it's a different philosophy compared to how they were for like a lot of the 2010 or 2000s.
So. Yeah, it's a big change in their philosophy. But then at the same time, like you point out, it's also kind of a return to form. They've really focused on their software. They've also built in features that make it really easy to be on iOS and Android and still kind of live integrated in the Microsoft world. Windows 10 has features that improve that interoperability. They also, you know, allow things like resuming your work on your mobile device from the work that you're doing in your desktop and stuff like that. So, you know, in to that degree, it doesn't really matter which mobile OS you're using. The services still work between, and that's just as good. Someone pointed out in the chat room, sorry, it just whizzed by there, but that, you know, just as a reminder, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly, that's the phone that she uses is an Android as well. She says that Microsoft services just work well on Android. So, hey, if it does the trick, then it doesn't matter a whole lot. But it's nice to know Bill Gates is on our side. Nice to have you, Bill. Good to have you here. Hey, should we talk a little bit about, well, last week we mentioned that Google was considering making some changes to address what the EU had charged, you know, $2.42 billion euro antitrust ruling based on how Google was treating its search results around shopping. And, you know, compared to competitors that were also appearing in that area. So that happened. Part of that agreement, even though Google is going back and appealing the ruling, part of the agreement is that Google needs to make changes to make it fit more fair, you know, in the interim and beyond. And we had talked a little bit about their potential plan last week. Well, that has actually happened. They're doing what they were planning on. So basically, they're going to allow competitors to bid for, and they're going to be, you know, reselling ad space up at the top of search results in Europe on their Google homepage. Google is also going to be bidding on those auctions as well against the competitors that are coming in to also go for those spaces. Google apparently has a cap that it's set for itself that it can't pass, but you know, a lot of the competitors are saying, well, this is no good. Now Google's, you know, just going to make, you know, make all sorts of money off of this. They're going to have to pay high rates in order to win those auctions because Google's in the game as well. And, you know, has the money to back it up. They say it's operating as a separate business in these auctions, to be fair to competitors. Google says this. What do you guys think? Is this a good kind of way to tackle the antitrust issue that the EU has dropped on Google's lap? What do you think?
So wait, are they so that you're going to be able to bid against Google?
Yeah.
Google's cap then would probably become your floor if Google wants that space.
That's the challenge. Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. I'm just like, exactly, let me make sure I have this.
I know. Okay. You, and when you put it in that term, then it almost sounds like, well, wait a minute. That's not fair. Because ultimately, Google ends up winning, right? They just, like, in a
well,
I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I mean, it sounded more like there will be bidding and then there will be a limit above which Google might not go. And then if people wanted to go above that, then they're guaranteed. But I thought the other article in the rundown was also super interesting because it was in Bloomberg. It sort of says the remedy that Google proposes will be tested by asking Google's competitors what they think of it. Ah. And if you follow the history of the investigation that the European Commission did, like even after they made their big, you know, decision, they didn't prescribe and say, hey, Google, here's what you did wrong and here's what you should do to fix it. They were like, hey, Google, here's what you think you did wrong. What do you think you should do to fix it? And so it's really interesting that they're like, how do we know if Google's fixed it? We're going to ask the people who complained and see if they like it or not. And I don't know, something about that. I have a lot of opinions, but that just seems a little strange.
Strange that the competitors would have such a powerful role in determining whether it's the right direction or not.
Well, if the final arbiter is whether the people who complained are happy,
yeah.
You know, there was at least one that was funded by Microsoft, and now there's a detente where like Microsoft agreed not to sort of fund some of those anti-Google lobbying groups like iComp and that sort of stuff, I believe. And so a lot of those pressures have sort of ratcheted down a little bit. But, you know, why should shopping comparison engines show up as opposed to, say, Amazon or eBay? Well, if it was the comparison shopping engines that complained rather than Amazon or eBay, then asking what the right decision or remedy is to the shopping comparison engines, you're probably going to end up with a result that is a little more favorable to shopping comparison engines. And it's a little unclear to me if that's really what consumers want or if they'd rather have like a place like Amazon or eBay where they can actually, you know, buy an object as opposed to comparing and doing another level of trying to look for where things would be. So.
Yeah, so I wonder how long it's going to take for us to realize or for us to learn how the competitors do actually feel. I mean, if this goes into effect right away, I'm sure it won't take very long. It seems like early on they are not feeling very strongly about this as being a solution.
Right.
You know, I think they're worried that ultimately this just means that they end up paying more for, you know, similar placement. I guess what I was saying as far as like, you know, all it does is benefit Google is if Google has the ability, like you were saying, Stacey, of always bidding up to a cap, then no matter what, I mean, technically they could just always do that, right? And no matter what, they're always making more than that. And that could benefit Google greatly in that regard. But that would also probably not be that fair. And the people that are judging the competitors would be very vocal about that. So maybe that would be the
chance. Who hasn't ever gamed a charity auction just to bid up, you know, the price for your charity? See, it's
that's true.
It's the same sort of theory,
yeah.
Except not for charity. So I don't know.
For Google internal charity, yeah.
We'll have to see how it goes. If it is an auction, though, then there is a little bit of an economic incentive to not overbid. So
yeah.
We'll see how it all turns out.
Yes, yes. Before we get to our final ad and then tips and tricks and picks and anything else that rhymes with that, those words, are there any final stories that you wanted to talk about that we didn't jump to? Oh, yes, Matt, go.
Yes. calling in from DC. Hi, longtime listener. Just the fact that on the iPhone they are switching to away from Bing to use Google search results in Siri and Spotlight. Like, that's a pretty big change. That's another one where I really wish I could be a fly on the wall to hear all the different negotiations and what exactly happened there.
Yeah, iOS and macOS users are going to now get Siri, get web search in Siri pointed to Google search, not Bing, although Bing will still be the default engine for image search. And then YouTube, of course, will be the default engine for video search. But this seems to be timed with macOS High Sierra, iOS 11 coming out. But yeah, that really does seem like a big change. Since the beginning, it's always been Bing, right?
I think it was in iOS. I think Siri might have always been Bing, or you know, right. Apple was tilting it towards Bing for quite a while. So
okay.
Now, if only the Amazon Echo could sign a similar deal. So it's because when you ask the Amazon Echo a question, you get to Bing, and Bing is not as satisfactory as Google. I don't see that happening. But ooh, what happens with the HomePod? Do you think that would go to Bing? Or do you think, I mean, because it doesn't have that would be a competing product against Google Assistant, basically.
Good question.
Did that question even make sense?
Uh-huh.
It may, like, yeah. I don't know the answer, obviously.
No. I mean, none of us do.
I'm not really quite sure what that will mean for the HomePod. When does the HomePod? I'm looking it up right
December.
Now.
December.
It comes out in December. Okay.
Theoretically. Yeah. That's the stated for now.
Wow, and now that I'm looking at the HomePod, I'm like, oh, the smaller Amazon Echo has the same kind of full body mesh thing going on. They're all going in that direction, aren't they?
I don't appreciate the full body mesh. Or even the partial mesh that like the Google Home has. I'm just kind of like, eh.
Just make it all plastic.
You know, really just stick it up in the ceiling. I've got it. Just work with my existing Sonos and then I'm fine.
Yes.
Because I've already got those.
Exactly. I know one last one real quick, and then I promise we will get to the ad and tips and tricks and all that kind of stuff. Twitter, jumping from 140 characters to 280 characters. How do we feel about this pending change that's probably going to happen that's rolling out to test users right now? Doubling the amount of characters, basically. It's a complicated issue. But we all have thoughts.
I cannot believe that this was their response to, hey, dude, the president of the United States has, you know, like not started a war, let's say really mortally offended North Korea, and we might end up, you know, in like World War III because of it. So Twitter, what's your role in all this? And Twitter's like, you know what? I have an idea. Let's just add more characters. Let's just do it.
People need the ability to say more of those words.
We'll get more nuanced arguments and attacks, I'm sure.
Well, and it's funny how a lot of people have asked for the ability to edit tweets. And so there was at least one where people were like, can we get the ability to edit tweets? And like, look, everything's rounded now. Okay, but can I edit tweets? Look, much more room. But, you know, was it Frost who said, you know, the whole part about poetry is constraints?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting if we're still complaining in a year like, oh, 280 is not enough, or how we'll look at it. I'll be curious.
Yeah.
Because we got really angry about the likes or the stars or whatever on Twitter, and now it's hearts or you know, nobody. It was fine. Sometimes it's just change of version. So.
Absolutely. It's change of version. I know I'm guilty of that. When I first saw it, I was like, yes, this is great. How many times am I editing down my, you know, removing vowels and adding symbols in order to make a thing fit into a single tweet? So this will help with that. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, wait a minute. Now I'm, instead of seeing little blurbs, I'm going to start seeing paragraphs. And am I okay with that? And I'm really back and forth. I'm trying not to hate it for change's sake. But Twitter did point out that in Japan, the service, you know, many, if not most of the words represented by symbols. So 140 characters means something very different in Japan than 140 characters in the English language, let's say.
That felt very much like post-rationalization right there. That's like, Yeah, in Japan, they can totally say a lot more because their language is pictograms.
Yeah.
But if that's 140 words versus 140 characters, and they're not, and they say only 1% of the tweets there use all 140 characters, I don't know.
What percentage of their tweets, what percentage of their users or tweets are sent in Japanese compared to English or Russian or any other? I mean, that's that again. That felt like I'm in the marketing team. Here, let's tell them this.
We've got this fact. Know. This fact that we can throw in there. Yeah, that's a perfect fact for this.
Journalists love facts. Great.
It's true. It's true. Oh. Yeah, I guess we'll remains to be seen how this what this will do or how much it will actually matter. But you're absolutely right, Matt. It's easy to get upset about things like this and then look back 4 months later and realize I don't care.
Yeah. Basically. Oh, did I really get that upset over a service that lets me microblock? Really? Okay.
Yep, exactly. All right. Let's take a quick break. Thank the sponsor of this episode, and then we'll get into tips, tricks, and picks and all that stuff. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. We live our lives on these devices. Maybe not this one, because this one's really small. But we definitely live our lives on devices more this size, and they're connected to LTE. So we understand the effects of cellular network congestion in crowded environments, let's say airports, shopping malls, other busy areas. Things get slowed down. Your favorite apps become barely usable. All sorts of things happen when suddenly your bandwidth is cut down for those reasons. And that's why Snapdragon Gigabit LTE was designed to deliver the fastest mobile connectivity and help speed things up in crowded places. With additional lanes for your data to flow on and the ability to squeeze more speed from each LTE connection, Snapdragon Gigabit LTE is like driving on a much wider, much faster data highway. Average LTE download speeds are up to 7 times faster than typical home Wi-Fi. And it can turbocharge all of your connected apps as a result. You can stream 360-degree videos in YouTube VR in 4K resolution with minimal buffering or stuttering on the train or wherever you happen to be. Will you be doing that? You can if you want to. Access all of your files in the cloud nearly as fast as you would if they were stored on your phone. That is what they're always driving for with cloud storage. You want it to feel like it's a local connected drive, and here you can do that. Download hours of movies or music in a matter of seconds. You can also load Android Instant apps, and it happens like true to the word. It happens instantly. It happens instantly because it has the bandwidth to do that with. Make the most of your unlimited data plan. To learn more about faster network connections in crowded places, visit snapdragon.com/gigabit. That's snapdragon.com/gigabit. And we thank Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE for their support of This Week in Google. Great to have you guys on board. Okay, it's the tips time. Stacey, let's start with you. What you got? What's your thing?
So I don't have a thing because I'm traveling and many of my recent things have been installed / they don't fit in suitcases. So instead, I have a great book for you guys. So this is a science book. It's about the 5 previous extinctions. So we probably know about like the Triassic extinction where not the dinosaurs. Was that the dinosaurs? The Jurassic was the dinosaurs. Anyway. Okay. I did read this book. I promise you guys. and it's basically like a geology book, but it's written really well. Peter Brannon is the author, and he does a great job making the subject both accessible but interesting and then also relevant for today, because it talks about, my gosh, the overarching, I guess, the elephant in the room here is climate change and what we are doing. Are we heading towards the next big extinction? And I just, as a science-y kind of person, I really enjoyed it. As a writer, I enjoyed his writing. I'm going to tell you guys, though, that my husband tried to read it and he was like, eh, but he reads more like Malcolm Gladwell business books that benefit him. So this is probably more like, if you're intellectually curious about things, it was a fun book for those people. So,
Does it make you wonder if the world is going to end? And if so, is that fun?
you know, I, I'm here at a security conference right now. So I'm like, the world, you know, it might end, but we might all just screw everything up before that.
There's a million reasons this could all go wrong. Don't just think it's just the world ending. It's all these other reasons, too.
I'm like, in geologic time, you know, is the world going to... In a way, it was kind of comforting because, you know, the world actually ending because of our climate change and, like, mass species extinction. Actually, this is going to take, like, 1,000 years, you know. So that's oddly comforting. We might be really unhappy for the last 600 or even 800 of it. But, you know, we'll still be here.
But at least we'll still be here. We might not want to be here, but we will be. That's something
and we'll
positive.
We'll be tweeting 280 characters at a time.
The whole
Thank you
time.
Very much.
Yes.
At some point,
we'll
that'll
more,
get
more space to talk about our feelings of existential dread.
Until it gets cut down to 5 characters, and that helps that helps us not enjoy our time, whatever time we do have. All right, excellent. So that is the ends of the world. Volcanic apocalypses, lethal oceans, and our quest to understand Earth's past mass extinctions. If you want to check it out, there you go. There it is on Amazon. Is there an audiobook? Yeah, there's an audiobook. So you can listen to it as well.
That might be fun to read.
That's
right
down my alley. Matt, what's your stuff?
Okay. I am going to go from mass extinctions to a story of hope and happiness, which is there's a lot of stuff in DC that people have opinions about, but everybody in DC that I've talked to really thinks that government could do better at technology being more effective and more efficient. And so one of the projects that we've worked on is called vets.gov. It's a one-stop shop where veterans, or if you know someone who's a veteran, please let them know about it. You can discover, apply, manage, and track your benefits. So everything from pension to burial benefits to GI Bill comparison tools. And we just passed a really big milestone, 250,000 plus veterans have applied for healthcare benefits through this site. Nice. It's really wild because previously they would often have to use a paper form and they would have to wait over 100 days on average. Now half of them get information within 10 minutes. So I want to use this as a slight pitch to just say, if you are listening to this podcast, if you're watching right now, this is a small team of people who by building a web form, were able to get more veterans their health benefits. We've also got specific projects where we're trying to make it so that patients and doctors can have better health care. So not just paying for the number of tests that they do, but actually the quality of care. How often do people come back to hospitals? There's also projects like at the Small Business Administration, we had a person start this week and from his oath ceremony basically walked him straight over to the Small Business Administration where he's helping with some of the disaster relief loan stuff related to the recent hurricanes. So there's a ton of really interesting projects. Even soldiers, you know, if you're moving across the country, if you have a change of station, that can be really stressful. Trying to make that a more seamless, better, more efficient experience is something that's really important. So whether it's something like bug bounties. The federal government didn't have any kind of bug bounty until last year, and the U.S. Digital Service, specifically starting at the Pentagon, ran the very first one. So if you have skills in, you know, site reliability engineering, engineering in general, software engineering, if you are a designer, if you're a product manager, consider doing a tour, you know, 6 months, maybe a year at the U.S. Digital Service, because there are a lot of great projects to work on and some really interesting things to tackle as well. That's my pitch.
Oh my gosh. Matt, a couple weeks ago, my husband sent me a chat and he was like, Stacy, you should talk to Matt Cutts about using IoT in the U.S. government, because I believe you tweeted about having your Veterans Affairs stuff attached to like a Raspberry Pi and a dashboard that's like showing people.
Yes.
So I was really excited. I was like, oh, I should talk to him about using IoT in the government. So this sounds very cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really interesting projects, and even though the work is often hard, sometimes it's frustrating, and sometimes the projects don't work out. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but at the end of the day, you go home, and you're like, okay, something got better, not just for 10 Americans or 1,000 Americans, but often 10,000, 100,000, a million Americans, and that is something that you can feel really good about. So there's all kinds of interesting projects and hard problems to solve, but also leveling up your skills, working with different parts of the government and partners at different agencies. It's been a wild experience, and I'd recommend it for anybody to give it a try because you can really help a lot of people.
Wow. Awesome work. That sounds fantastic. My dad is a veteran. I know how challenging it can be at times for veterans in a lot of these facilities. So fantastic work. And that's got to feel good for you, man. Considering what you're doing, I know you did a lot of really great, cool things for an insane amount of people at Google. But I don't know, at some point it's nice to kind of get that higher purpose, you know what I mean? To be able to really touch people's lives. And I'm sure that's exactly where you're at right now, what you're experiencing.
It's great to work with the teams. They're inspirational and just coming into work every day, it's a pleasure to work with them.
So. Yeah, right on. Excellent stuff. Vets.gov. Mine is, well, for those of you who have a Google Home, you probably have been asking, I know I was probably from day one, why you couldn't set reminders on the Google Home if you could do it in Assistant, because you're in your kitchen, you're doing things. It's like the ideas of what you need to do come to you when you least expect it, when you're busy doing something else. You're doing the dishes, you're zoning out, and suddenly you think, oh, I need to do that thing. I'll totally remember to do that thing. And then you end the dishes, and then you realize you didn't remember to do that thing when it's too late. Now you can set a reminder on your Google Home, and I worked with it yesterday a little bit, and it works really well. You say, okay, G, remind me at whatever time to do this thing, and then it asks you to confirm it. You save it. Once that time hits, your Google Home will like go, ding, it lets out this little chirp for you and says, I have a reminder for Jason. And so then if you look at your Google Home, you'll see this single LED light is permanently lit on the top. It's like a notification dot. So that tells you have a notification waiting for you. So then when you go to your Google Home, you say, okay, gee, what's my reminder, or what's up, or however you want to phrase that. It's pretty smart. It picks up on it and it reads back your reminder and the dot goes away. And so you've kind of erased that off and you can do that thing that you wanted to remember how to do. It also ends up syncing into your email if you've got it set up to do that already, for your reminders to appear in your inbox, which I do. Also appears in your notification shade on your Android device. So it's a great way to fire off a reminder. Finally, you can do it with Google Home. They just rolled that out a couple of days ago. And I think it's pretty much working on all Google Homes at this point. So check it out. It comes in really handy. That's that. If you didn't know, now you know. And that, I think, for the episode is that as well. This was a lot of fun, you guys. Thank you so much for coming on and making it easy for me. I appreciate it.
It was a ton of fun. Yeah, no, it's yeah. And there was a lot of news to talk about too.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I love coming on This Week in Google and having like this huge dump of Google news and not having to go too far out. And I think Amazon, I also kind of put into that category with Echo. There's a lot of crossover there, so that qualified. Matt Cutts, tell people where you want everyone to kind of follow the awesome work that you're doing with the U.S. Digital Service and beyond.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's the U.S. Digital Service, which is just usds.gov. And if you go to usds.gov/join, if you're someone in the tech industry, you don't have to be in Silicon Valley. If you have, you know, some hard-won skills about deploying software, we would love to have you. So that's usds.gov. Read about it, learn about it. You can click on the Our Work tab and see the sorts of stuff that we've done, the sort of projects we work on. And then if you want to join, it's just /join on that website.
Piece of cake. Right on. Thanks, Matt. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to get to talk to you. Thank you. And of course, Stacey Higginbotham, repeat almost weekly, not last week, but that's okay because we got you on this week, host of this show. So you're going to catch her. I'm sure you're going to be on next week, right? Talking about all the Pixel news.
Oh, heck yes.
Oh, heck yeah. Cool. Well, I can't wait to hear that. Tell people what you want them to know. Where do you want people to follow everything you're working on?
Oh, so I do the Internet of Things podcast. You can find that at all fine podcast establishments. And I do Stacey on IoT. That is my website where you can sign up for my newsletter, which comes out every week. It's super fun.
Right on. And follow the IoT journey with Stacey. I'm sure probably going to have some things on the Amazon announcements in there as well. Cool stuff, Stacey. Thank you. Always a lot of fun. We do this show, well, actually more like Leo, Jeff, and Stacey do this show usually every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, maybe more like 1:30, depends on the day of the schedule.
It is always 1:30.
Always 1:30. Okay. All right. the page is a little different. So I'll just say 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 20:30 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can always do that. twit.tv/live. Or if you want to get it in your podcast aggregator of choice or go to our site to get it, just remember twit.tv/twig, T-W-I-G. You go there. You can find all the options, all the different ways that you can subscribe, audio, video, start with episode one. It's only going to take you 434 days to catch up, not including any new episodes that record during your time of starting from episode one. But you can do it if you like. Make sure and let us know if you do that because we want to know. I'm Jason Howell. I'm always happy to get the chance to hop on here. You can find me at Tech News Today, of course. The daily show that I do with Megan Maroney talking about tech news. Also, All About Android every Tuesday where we talk about Android stuff. Makes sense because of the name. And a whole lot more, but I'll be all over the network. And I'm always happy to get the chance to hop on This Week in Google. So thanks for having me. And the gang will see you next week on another episode of Twig. See you then.